You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 157. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll discuss the meatballs, talk about Adam Simber being traded, and the Mahoning Valley Scrappers are no longer affiliated with the Cleveland Indians, discuss some non-tender candidates that the Indians could be looking at coming up here soon, and of course, we'll take your questions. Joining me for all that and more is another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. As you know, immediately prior to this, I was under assault by various cats with their psychological strikes, but I offended them off momentarily so we can squeeze in a podcast.
It was a brave battle, and they're sneaky little fellows.
They're very suave. They kept both of me and my wife up for 5 hours last night, so ideal. Really cool stuff, man.
Is it one of those situations where they just sprint around at night and, like, terrify
Not
you?
Not even. So one of them somehow figured out how to open a closet up. Inside that closet was a mirror, and the mirror was right next to the wall. And so when he'd lean up against it and attack it to try and attack the cat in the mirror, because he hates Mirror World, it would just knock it against the wall, which is next to where our bedroom is. So we just heard, dunk, 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 dunk. And it was great. The other one was also going crazy and meowing at us. They didn't have any food,
I'm pretty sure Mirror World is a Rugrats episode. I recall that, where they thought they went into another world.
I'll be honest with you. Know. I've watched Rugrats like 6 times in my entire life, and I always thought it was dumb. So,
well, I would hope that was because you were an adult when you watched it.
No, I was a child. I didn't have Rugrats at the time, see? I didn't have cable, so instead I watched cool shows like Power Rangers and Action Man and Animaniacs and Hysteria and...
Oh, Action Man? I recognize everyone but Action Man. That's not a real thing.
And Mystic Knights of Tir-Nanog. So...
Anyway, it wasn't clear enough by the intro here. There's not a whole lot of baseball going on, but we could talk about Action Man. I'm never going to take again for granted the fact that real reporters, i.e. not me, are like... around the general managers and stuff, because it's clear like how many more scoops they get when they can actually be around these people instead of just tweet or call them, because there's nothing. I'm sure part of that is just because we're in such a weird time and nobody really knows, which also sucks because you kind of think like this is a weird unknown time, there'd be stuff to talk about, but it's the fact that you can't really estimate anything because nobody knows. Nobody wanted Brad Hand, but they paid who was that? Was it Robbie Ray just made a bunch of money, which was a surprise, and then Drew Smiley and Charlie Morton made a bunch of money. So it seems like there's going to be a bunch of 1-year contracts. But
Mike
that
Minor
help.
Just got signed for the 2 years, I think.
Yeah, I think he went back to the Royals, right?
Yeah. Like Mike Minor, yeah. What the hell? But yeah.
Of all people, Mike Minor.
Michael A. Taylor, World Series champion, signed a contract. Good for him.
Yeah, there you go. Michael Taylor, I wanted to think of as I had an old
Michael A.
baseball
Taylor.
League. Michael A. Taylor. he was really good on my team, and I was really proud of him, and then he wasn't very good in real life. But he was good in that. That's all that mattered.
He's all right, defensively.
Yeah. You know what else matters, Mary?
What's that?
Meatballs, Mary. They matter.
There it is.
This is our segment. Now we're doing where we deliver you fun little tidbits and throw them up over the plate. Seems weird to say throw it up over the plate, but, you know, toss it up over the plate for you to hit out of the park. We're doing nice historical ones because obviously there is no little StatCast things to poke at during the off season, but I believe you have one, Mary, from way back when.
I do, as a matter of fact. I want to talk about Jack Heideman. You know who Jack Heideman is, Matt?
He was on the Mythbusters, right? He was the guy with the mustache. And
yes, that's... I don't know. I don't watch Mythbusters, to be honest. Jamie Heideman. The only things I watch on cable are Bar Rescue. And that's it. I don't watch Bar Rescue.
I think he was on that, too. He's in a bunch of things. You never know.
Jack Heideman was the first-round draft pick by the Indians in 1967 at a high school. Interesting stuff. He's also arguably the worst player in Indians history by wins above replacement in his, let me see here. Yes, 5 years with the Indians, 239 games. He was worth negative 3.9 wins above replacement.
Jesus.
I know. It's actually pretty impressive how bad he was.
What years was this between?
This was from 1969 to 1974. When he's finally traded. He was Hertz for some of that time, but like you don't record positive or negative wins above replacement, so really he crammed that into about 2.5 years. But what I want to talk about was a very interesting game that I want to talk that I kind of call the day Jack Heideman was God. because he was very bad. In 1970, he was his rookie year, because he kind of came up in 1969, played 3 games, 4 plate appearances, did not collect a hit. He was the 6th youngest player in baseball at the time. By the time he made the big club in 1970, he was the 9th youngest player in baseball. He ended up getting 94 hits all season, hitting 211, 265, 292. But he actually had a two-week stretch, which contained 2 games that were a total of 9 of his hits for that season. So in 2 games, he collected 10% of his hits. On one of those games, he went 5 for 5 with 2 runs scored and an RBI against the Tigers. It was pretty impressive. I'm blown away about how he could just cram it in like this. He was facing off against, let's see who was pitching that day. Earl Wilson was the starting pitcher for the Tigers. He would end up going, let me look here, 1970. He had a 4.58 ERA that year. It was 5-12, so he was very bad. The Indians were very bad that year. I'm pretty sure the Tigers were even worse. The Indians won something like 75 games. Oh, no, actually, no, the Tigers were better than them. So anyway, he went 5 for 5, including a single that ended up being driven in by Ray Fosse, one of the ugliest men in baseball history. And then he singled, drove in Eddie Leon. Then he singled, nothing happened. He singled again, nothing happened. He singled again, nothing happened. This was his single greatest offensive day. 5 hits out of the leadoff position, scored 2 runs, got an RBI. By the end of June, he had brought his OPS for the year up by 100 points. I'm willing to bet that people were feeling like he was going to finally turn it around. He did not. So he ended up being very bad. Guess who the pitcher was that game, Matt, for the Indians? 1970.
Oh, is it I know who it is. I can't think of his name right now, but of course it was Sam McDowell.
It was Sam McDowell, which is also, I think, very weird.
Every time. He's always there, lurking in your record books. Nobody ever knows who he is. He just shows up, and he's always.
Cleveland won 8-2, with Jack Heidemann at the top of the order as a shortstop, the spark plug, 5 hits. Impressive stuff. That was.
Now, I do wonder if that's. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that was the single best game of his career that I can tell. He only had more than 1 hit or more than 4 hits one other time. That was 2 weeks prior on the 16th. There you go. Interesting stuff. I thought, just very horrible. But even the worst guys are good for one day. And you have to imagine how good. It reminds me, actually, I was watching Moneyball a couple weeks ago. And, Billy Beane was ostensibly a 5-tool hitter. And in that movie, Jonah Ryan, that's a character in Veep. Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill's character was like, I would have drafted you in the 11th round, if at all. So maybe it's just because they didn't see what was right with him. And there you go. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, the Jack Heinemann story makes me think of Cleveland Indians legend of 2015, Jerry Sands.
Perfect example.
Sands wasn't that bad, but he was worth 0.1 Fangraph war. And he had that. What was that? That wasn't even like a week, was it? Where he was just, he hit like 3 home runs. We all lost our minds.
Oh, that was incredible. I think Shelly Duncan had a run like that too. Remember when he was a defensive ace in left field when he one game in Texas?
There were so many like random spurts of good players in the early 2010 Indians.
You know what it was?
So bad for Shin Choo Choo.
I think it was just, I think it was just part the, there was a certain subset of teams that were just, still doing things quote unquote the old way, and so you'd get just a garbage pitcher and so a mediocre hitter, which the Indians were so good at finding, just guys who were so flawed in some or myriad ways, and they'd go up against guys and they'd just have a game because they're finally facing a quad A pitcher being a quad A bat, and they were a good quad A bat. So unfortunately, those things have kind of been sifted out, so there we go.
Yeah, that's good. We're kind of missing that thing because everybody is, they know what they're doing now, which stinks. And like today, Zach Mizell wrote about all the, it's a miserable article. I mean, it's good, but it's about all the outfielders and how bad they've been for the Indians since, I think it's basically at the turn of the century. It's just a marching line. It's like the Browns quarterback of just a long list of bad outfielders and just like people you never want to think about again, like Michael Bourne, Drew Stubbs. I mean, Shin Choo Choo's there, but he's good.
I mean, you bring up guys who like we remember, too. There's the other guys that we just blanked out of our brains. Like, I'm going to use the internet real quick to find one. I'm just going to click on a random year. I don't know. Let's see who the outfielders were in 2010. That's always a fun year. Been looking at these water lists all day. Trevor Crowe. That was a classic. Trevor Crowe. Austin Kearns, remember when he was there? Oh man, guess it wasn't that bad that year. He had 272, 354, 419, and was the, you know what? It's almost like they foretold what was coming because he was the Indians' third best hitter with a line like that. So there you go.
And it hasn't gotten any better. So they've gotten better at drafting pitchers, but
center fielder Michael Brantley. Players. That was a good one. Oh, there's Shelly Duncan.
I forgot. How long, he wasn't there very long, was he?
Who?
Center field? Michael Brantley?
No. Yeah, they tried it like a year or two. So. And they're like, this is a bad idea. I think it's not, not
terrible.
Let's not do this anymore.
But yeah, getting back to, I don't know if it's slightly better or worse modern day, but we have some things happen. Adam Simber is no longer with the Indians. He was designated for assignment last week when they brought another reliever, Jordan. Is it Jordan Humphreys? I already forgot his name, but from the Giants. They brought in him and moved Adam Simber to clear space. And then the Marlins basically just took him for cash. 100,000 grand came back to the Indians. So now Adam Simber, who I would nicely call it interesting to watch him pitch. It wasn't fun. It wasn't fascinating, but it was, some arenas were just interesting to watch. And he was one of those. He would throw, he had a super low delivery. He did a weird little like pigeon toed thing when he stood on the mound. That was another really, interesting about him.
Yeah.
I was going to say Tommy Pickles thing, but since you hate Rugrats, I can't freaking go with that. But yeah, he still like, he was just all kinds of weird. And if he was really good, it would have been really interesting. But as it was just interesting to watch him pitch, and he wasn't very good, but he was just a victim of the fact that he has to face three batters now or end an inning. And even like this year, he wasn't good against righties anyway, which is all he was there for. So I'm not sad that he's gone. I'm sure he's a nice person and I hope he does well in Miami. But even if he does, this isn't going to be like a Yandy Diaz all over again, where I can't believe the Indians possibly let him go for nothing. It's just, it was clear he didn't have it. He was never that great here. He just stopped striking people out. He didn't walk a whole lot when he was good, but then he just didn't strike anybody out either. And he was just not very effective. And Tito used him way too much. And he's gone now. He's in Miami. So,
well, you know, I mean, and you raise a good point. Like he was very much a specialist, and we just don't have those anymore. At the end of the day, that role, whatever role for a pitching specialist, is kind of gone because, I mean, he's going to have to face. I wrote an article about it that should be going up. I don't know, the same way you listen to this, I assume. I don't know when Matt edits this crap. But
it's, 3 weeks.
Well, it's perfect. Timeliness. That's what we look for here. You know, the splits against him were so absurd. I think it was like a 605 OPS against righties for his career to this point, like a 954 OPS against lefties. Like, yeah, it's great to have a guy who could at least try to mitigate the role of, you know, basically the entire White Sox lineup, or Miguel Sano, or Nelson Cruz, or, you know, whatever, Mike Trout or whatever. But the problem there, too, is like that 605 average is among all right-handed hitters, and the good ones beat the tits out of him. So that's just not going to go well anyway. I mean, it's like you said, I love the whole weird delivery thing for him. I love a Submariner. He's, you know, interesting to watch. And when it was going, it was very neat to see. And it just reminded me of like Joe Smith kind of, and other guys. I think he was one of the two or three pitchers where it looked as though the ball was rising almost just because of how low he released. Like he released it below his feet.
It always looked like it was coming up. That was the most interesting thing about him. It was, I know physically it's impossible. It's not a thing that happens, but it certainly looked like it was rising when he threw it.
I mean, the ball is not because of the velocity, spin. Just like right? Yeah, it's just rising because he's literally throwing it up, right? Like so. Now, like you said, it's just he was a creature of a time that no longer exists in baseball, and that's simply all there is to it. And now he just has to figure. I mean, hey, again, if he learns a changeup, then he'll be a much more effective pitcher. But he never struck anyone out to begin with. He was never superlative in anything except having a weird arm angle, and.
And he was superlative at that, given that.
Oh, 100%.
Superbly 100%. Weird arm angle. 100%.
Aesthetically, yeah. A superb player. But in terms of effectiveness, never any good. Like, that's the thing. Strikeouts weren't all that good. Ground ball rate was okay. You know, whatever. It was in the mid-50s, which for a relief pitcher is okay if you have high velocity. If you throw 86, it's not good. You know, I mean, think about someone like Dan Otero. He had a ground ball rate when he was good at, like, 66% or something like that. Like, if the ball went in the air, it was a home run, but it only happened, like, four times all year. So yeah, Simber was just superfluous. There's no role for him. The Indians are finally discovering some like velocity, and at the end of the day, that's the only game in town anymore. Like, you can have guys who have some kind of deception to a degree, but if you can't throw 94 95, you don't, you know, it's the same thing with like Brad Hand, who Simber came over with, oddly enough. Neither of them, Brad Hand was good this year, but I was, we were all nervous because he was only throwing 90, right? Like it seemed like we were just playing with fool's gold or with house money or something, whatever the thing is.
Playing with sleight of hand.
Nice. But yeah, I mean, was that trade a bust or not? I don't know. There was a hope, I think, that Simber would turn into something better and learn how to throw that changeup. And again, maybe he will in Miami, but I don't think he will. I think, like I said, he just doesn't have a role in baseball anymore. That sucks, you know. I mean, it's just we're mitigating a certain thing in baseball, and the more and more making it some sort of homogenized thing. I mean, you know, I don't know if I'm happy or sad or what about, you know, the Indians getting being able to platoon less. It was always kind of neat, you know, having Ryan Rayburn be Mike Trout for half the year, basically. But.
And it is, if things continue the way they are, I think. I mean, you mentioned the trade being a bust, but I mean, getting what, like a year and a half of really good Brad Hand, they pretty much won that trade.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Francisco Mejia is essentially nothing right now. He was terrible this year. He was okay last year. He was sort of okay the year before. So, I mean, there's still plenty of time. He's only 25, but I'm still not super upset about getting a good year and a half out of Brad Hand.
They
got what they wanted out of the trade. I'm assuming they never thought he would stay here forever. So this is what they wanted out of trading Francisco Mejia. And if the Indians value catcher defense as much as it seems, then he was never going to stick here anyway. So you might as well get a decent closer for a couple of years out of him.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, you know, it's like he was, if nothing else, Hand was like a bridge to this new young crop of pitchers. I mean, I'm sure they didn't plan 2 years ago to have Emmanuel Clase and James Karinchak back there with, of course, Phil Maton. Also,
of course, that's the number three. That's the third one you go to.
That's the third one. That's the third head of their Cerberus right there.
It is wild though that the Indians are about to have like a super fun bullpen, which seems like it's 100%. Been since the bullpen mafia, which wasn't good, but it was fun. But it seems like this would be the best that we've had in a long time.
There was like this vibe that they were good. I like that about the bullpen mafia. Like, yeah, they're good. They are not good. They're bad.
If you have a nickname, you got to be good, right? That's how it works, I think. And they had a nickname, so they were good.
But yeah, like I said, Simber was neat, and I think it was a neat thing to see and hope for. But if you can't get guys out, then you're just fucked at the end of the day. And his inability to get righties out this year was, I mean, again, sample size, I think was unfair to him this year. You look at 2019.
Yeah, it was like 11 innings. Yeah.
The numbers are much better for him, but I remember like being halfway hopeful before all this, that like if the tribe had made the playoffs in 2019, he'd be a good weapon because they would have faced a whole, like there were so many good right-handed hitters out there and they could just mitigate him. Like, you know, the entirety of like the Yankees lineup would just be kind of silenced half the time, but
yeah.
Didn't happen. And also now that doesn't matter anymore. So
because he is in Miami and they also got, I mean, this, I still think there's a chance they can maybe, we'll talk about non-tenders in a little bit, but they could open up a space to grab a lever there. They also just have, I mean, they have Phil Maton. What else do you need? But they also have, like you said, Klarinchak and Karinchak and Class A and Nick Whitgren. So, I mean, their bullpen isn't exactly desperate for Adam Simber anymore like it once was.
Like they have four, you know, they have a good four. I still think Phil Maton has something going for him. I mean, I think his velocity sucks ass, but.
Well, I think he does too.
That cutter, man. Who, baby? Movement, 4 days. He's like, right now he's a poor man's Brian Shaw, which sounds like a curse, but actually Brian Shaw was good. So, if he's your third or fourth best reliever, then you think you're doing okay. And then they just figure it out from there. Like you said, they'll find other guys. And as long as they can throw over 95, I'm fine with it. It's cool.
Yeah. And so where some of those guys came from, obviously, is they came through the minors. So that's usually how it works in baseball.
Nice. Good point. Okay.
This is a smooth transition to the fact that the Indians, the Mahoning Valley Scrappers, are no longer affiliated with the Indians. They and several other New York Penn League teams, and also randomly the AA Trenton Thunder, they moved to form their own league called the MLB Draft League, which will basically just give draft prospects another shot to be seen. Before the draft, so I'd assume their season is like early in the year. Then they have like an all-star break centered around the draft itself, which will be kind of neat. But it's part of the MLB's overall trimming of the minor league system. The Indians lose the Scrappers. They're losing one of the Arizona League teams. And I think there's talk they could, I think it's the Hillcats might be gone. And then Lake County would be the high A team. The Hillcats are at least on the chopping block. Maybe they could be, the contract is up in the air. But as of now, they have seven minor league teams that could go down a little bit more, but it's just a thing all over minor league baseball that teams are getting trimmed away. And I also saw that there's it's the upside, I think, of all this, if what it is, a combination of paying minor league players more and also controlling the quality of minor league stadiums and everything down there. I think it's a net positive if that happens. I think as much as I love weird, scrappy, lower levels of minor league baseball, I don't think it's great to, it's not great for attracting, I mean, like Kyler Murray, if he was, what would he be like riding a dirty bus between Oakland A affiliates right now? If he was, if he chose baseball instead of being a star quarterback, I think they realize they got to shorten the road to the majors at some way and make it less, because I mean, we always talk about like, it's a, almost as if it's a character building trait that you have to ride these shitty buses and you go in falling apart stadiums and you eat peanut butter sandwiches. But eventually teams got to realize if you treat your minor leaguers better, you can attract more players than making them slog through that for several years. But I guess this is just part of that. And it's kind of cool that also the scrappers and other teams, they aren't losing complete affiliation. They're going their own separate ways of still having baseball players, which I think is good, instead of making them all independent leagues. So I feel like this is a good in-between between getting rid of the minor league teams and keeping them around and letting them still get players to that will contribute in the major leagues somehow. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on, I guess, just the scrappers leaving in general and just the fact that MLB is trimming back all these minor league teams the way they are?
I mean, I think it's horrible that they're cutting back on the number of teams. Honestly, like you said, the argument is they want to have more control over things and they want to be able to maintain the, you know, quality of the thing. It's not like they couldn't afford that before, though. So I don't know. It's just I see it as just another step of, you know, a centralization, I guess, of what was once, you know, a less centralized sport. And I mean, you mentioned before, obviously, it making it easier to get to the majors, but it also is going to make less opportunities for people to try and get to the majors. Because if you have 40 less teams, you have 40 less rosters that need filling, which is.
I guess my thing players. Is how many of those, I mean, it's like a few hundred, but how many of those players actually make it compared to what you could just find?
And that's fair, but I mean,
because you still get plenty of exciting basketball players and football players out of nowhere. They don't have 20 times the number of players they have in their minor leagues.
I agree, but at the same time, those sports are generally easier to play in a lot of ways. Like obviously football is, you know, physically arduous, but it's not as fine motor skill. And basketball is, again, more, you know, you can dominate physically, which is the thing you can't really do in baseball, but you know, it's all those like little things that make baseball just more difficult to do. Like, again, hitting a 95-mile-an-hour fastball is just difficult. Again, no, I mean, I see what they're doing. I just think it's stupid and garbage because I love minor. I think having more minor league baseball is only good for the game overall. I think cutting out teams like this just makes it harder for people who don't live within, you know, 50 miles of a major metropolitan area to enjoy baseball, right? I don't like, and the fact that they're making this MLB draft league and it's going to be a money making thing, and then they're going to have players who are not making money play in it. Like, it's just it's kind of gross in that way too. Like, obviously the Cape Cod League is cute in its way, and this is kind of what they're trying to approximate in a sense. But the Cape Cod League is completely independent, right? It's just this thing that goes on out in Cape Cod. Whereas this is very much just a tool being used by the MLB to, again, control the sport more, which, yeah, maybe it'll lead to a better quality overall. I don't know. I feel like it's losing something. And that's just something is, again, it's a further, I don't know. I hate to say the word corporatization or something like that, but
I don't think the corporatization is completely bad. I think,
I mean, I get, it's a big money thing, obviously, you know, baseball, there's a lot of money to it, but I think by that same token, like if the teams really had these complaints about the quality of the fields, which I've read several of them, like I know like the Staten Island Yankees are no longer there. And the argument was in part because the field itself was not in high quality. Well, don't the Yankees have enough money to invest in the field to keep their players there, you know, essentially their property in good standing? Or you mentioned before, obviously, the peanut butter sandwiches and all that stuff. And that's quote unquote character building. Why is that? You know what I mean? That's one of those things where it's always like, why do they have to eat this garbage and live in this shitty way and have to be put up at a whatever when, yeah, obviously they're being underpaid in one sense, but also like it would cost so little to feed them better. You know what I mean? Like one of the many, like, I don't know. It's amazing to think of this as like an inefficiency within the game, but like, give organized strength and conditioning programs and give the kid the access to protein powder and normal meals. So they're not living off, you know, pizza every day and things like that. That's how you would develop just better players. Like, they'd just be bigger and stronger than everyone else. And The fact that instead the idea is just cut teams and then build things like the MLB Draft League, which, again, I think it's neat, but like if all these teams are – who are they going to be owned by, right? Are these teams going to be owned by
– I mean, I assume it's just Major League Baseball, right? It's just they
I run guess. Like, that's the thing. Draft. Like the owners of minor league teams aren't
– That's true, yeah.
Like, you know, that's the thing. You know, like I've worked for the Rock Cats at the time, or the Yard Goats now, and you know they were owned by this dude. He's a lawyer from New Britain. And then he just doesn't have to pay the players. The players are paid by the major leagues. So if it was independently, that's a different game. But so again, these kids still aren't – the kids playing in the MLB draft leagues aren't going to be paid at all because, again, it's a collegiate summer baseball league. So I guess they're just playing for the chance to be drafted.
I mean, have they said if they're not being paid? I don't think it's technically a collegiate league, is it?
If it's post... I'm just looking at the Wikipedia article. It says it's a collegiate summer baseball league. They're amateur baseball leagues in the U.S. and Canada. So – like the Cape Cod League is an example of it. So,
well, Cape Cod isn't are they affiliated at all or no?
No, they're just an independent thing.
No, but see, this one is. This is actually affiliated,
by right? It is affiliated, but it's but again, if it's if it is be paid. If they're collegiate players, right?
Yeah,
then they can't be, they paid, be paid. Basically, like that's what it is. So,
yeah,
but yeah. So I think, like I said, it seems shitty in a way, I guess, because it's just they're. I'm glad these teams are still going to exist, the Scrappers and the Spikes. That's a fun one. The Black Bears, the Crosscutters, they have a really sick look. Oh, damn.
And the Crosscutters is weird, too, because they're the home of minor league baseball, Little League Baseball. There's a World Series there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, of all the places to loot. And I guess that could be a marketing ploy right there, right? Like, you know, they have the minor league, they have the Little League, and then during the Little League World Series, they have the one pro game happen, and hey, why don't we just also look at these? These are the stars of immediately tomorrow. Whoa, huh? Like I said, I'm glad some of these still exist. It sucks to lose teams. Like again, maybe the field itself wasn't nice, but that Staten Island ballpark is dope. Like it's right on the water. You can just see all these gigantic ships going by. It's very cool. I spent a lot of time at a low A field in Lexington, Kentucky. I don't know if they're going to still exist. They probably won't, but you know, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a huge loss to small to medium sized town culture, where baseball isn't this huge thing at a palace. It's just this dumb, stupid thing you can go to on a Wednesday or a Friday night that doesn't cost, you know, you can go with your family for $60 or whatever, you know, get tickets and hot dogs because it's a quarter hot dog night or something like that.
I think there's probably some math somewhere in there that it's better for those type of fans to just watch like on TV as far as the health of the sport instead of just going to these minor league stadiums, which I don't think is completely right, but I'm sure that there's some arithmetic somewhere that says it's better for them to watch TV than go to these minor league stadiums, which is part of their goal, I'm sure.
Oh no, and I get that. You know, I'm sure there's some consultant, you know, some McKinsey guy came and said, we just need to eliminate this stupid small thing because these TV types just need to be able to be, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I've talked in the past about the fun idea of having the massive FA Cup style tournament, and I think
it actually got brought up at one point, which I thought was crazy. Like Merritt thought of that. They listened to the podcast, and they.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I it's just. Baseball being historically such a much more community-based game than maybe not. I mean, football obviously has Texas, and basketball has places like Indiana and like, you know, New York City and places like that. But baseball was so long stitched just all across America, and I just feel like this removes more of that. And like, if you live in Iowa or wherever, you know, some of these places where you have to drive 6 hours minimum to not even so much be at a baseball stadium, but be at a place where you receive that broadcast on television sometimes, like, you know, like that's the thing. Like, you know, I guess it's I don't know. I think it's kind of shitty because you're cutting more things that make living in, you know, smaller parts of America, a lot of fun out of it.
Yeah. So. And I do think though, as far as like the players themselves, you just got to trim that journey to the major. Cause I mean, it's all a system that was like what in the 60s or 50s where they just had a bunch of these farm teams. It just sort of never changed. I don't feel like you need that much anymore. At one point you did, you just need to have a smattering of players because you didn't have a way to measure every little millisecond of them. But I feel like you could just like either get away. Like it's a crutch at this point. At one point you needed to develop players this long and drag them along. But I feel like at this point you could Major League Baseball teams could bring up these players earlier than they do and actually pay them and let them develop a little more in the majors if it wasn't set in stone so long ago that you do it this way. I feel like it's to the point where it's they're using it as a way so they don't have to play players. Like it's like in like these players, they get to their, they're not, they come up and they don't start actually getting paid like 24, 25 or older, and then they hit a free agent when they're like 30. They could have come up and developed in the majors like again, Kyler Murray, he developed right when he came up and when he came out of college and he was getting paid right away instead of slogging through a minor league system. I feel like if baseball could do that in some way, even slightly early, which they're not going to change at this point, but even just making it a little more appealing to be in the minors, I think is going to go a long way towards the health of the game as far as getting these big star players instead of them going to other sports, which they're doing at Kyler Murray's level when they're already in college. They're doing it younger when they're looking at these NFL and NBA players who are just, they're drafted and they play, but then you look at Major League and they're drafted, they disappear for several years and they pop up again and then they're bad for a year and then they're sort of good and then they're a free agent and all we talk about is that nobody wants to pay them. So I get if it's a way of shortening the bridge to the major leagues, but I do agree that it sucks for the actual people in these towns, which I think is good if they're fine. I don't want all these teams to disappear. I think it's, I just want somebody for me to be baseball everywhere, whether it's an independent league, which kind of sucks because that's harder and it's less money for everybody involved. But I also don't think it helps Major League Baseball in general, just to have basically hundreds of extra players who are being paid next to nothing and have no chance of making the majors and making that big payday, but you're just stringing them along to fill in your rosters to develop your other players that are actually going to make it.
No, and I get that too. You know, I was talking to my dad the other day, and apparently back in like the 50s and 60s, you know how many minor league teams like the Dodgers had?
Oh, it got ridiculous. I think it was like a dozen at one point.
They had 22 teams.
Yeah.
Like they had so many, which at that time, like you mentioned, you did have to do that because you had to go find the players across the country. And to your point, you know, obviously, hopefully this could streamline things and get good players to the majors faster. And at the end of the day, you know, get it so we can see the good players sooner, right? Like, but I mean, you just wonder where does it end, right? Like if they can really get it going that quicker, why even have single A? Why even have whatever? You know, why not have just two teams? Like obviously, you know, there's some teams who use like their AAA team as like the rehab squad, and then their double A is a development team, things of that nature. But
and that's one thing I've always wondered too. Like I've never played baseball at any level besides like little league. But like if. I mean, baseball has this long development cycle, but that's because of the way it's always been. But like, I mean, football and basketball, they've always started from the beginning where you basically have college and then the big leagues of it or whatever the equivalent is. But like, what if they did that with baseball from the beginning? Would it be all that different, or would players just develop quicker, or you maybe have a year or two where they're bad like they are in the NBA and NFL, and you just don't need these several years, but it's just an ingrained thing that baseball has with how much they hate the change. So I've always sort of wondered that, but I'm not smart enough or in tune with like development enough to know if that's really a thing that's necessary or it's just the way we've done it forever. So it's the way we do it of having them develop. I know it's baseball is a different thing because it's so much harder to like you're squaring up a ball, which is you can't just get by on athleticism, like you said, but maybe to a point you could, if everybody just had to, you would weed out the ones who can't do it and the ones who can. Like if you told me Juan Soto didn't have to go through the minors, I think he'd still be okay. He would have been like bad as a 19-year-old and then he'd still be great as whatever age he is. And then you know, there's players who would come up through. You wouldn't get as many like out of nowhere stories, but I also don't think we get as many as people think we do. Like there's not that many 20th round picks that come up and they're great. It so rarely happens. I don't think you build a whole minor league system around that potentially happening, but I don't know. It's a weird thing.
No, it is. You know, I mean, like you said, it's funny to look at a team like or a thing like the NBA, like they're going the other direction. Like they're adding minor league teams because if anything, there's players who might need in a couple more years to literally grow to be good at the NBA game, right? Like, I mean, obviously. Yeah. And then that was the way it was, you know, in the old days with baseball, kids just didn't go to school. So they just became major, like minor league baseball players and grew up there instead. So, you know, you're 18, you're maybe not good as someone who's 23, 24, 25. And then, you know, you hear that too about like the NFL too. It's like they want, sometimes you hear chatter about them wishing there was a minor league because you see guys like, you know, like Cameron Wake is a good example where he was no good when he was little, when he was younger, but then he went to the Canadian Football League and came back and was just a dominant pass rusher for years from the age like 28 on or something like that. Just things, I mean, these are outliers, but there's definitely a middle ground because development is still needed. You just wonder how much more they're going to cut, I guess. You know what I mean? Because this isn't the end. there's still going to be 100 and I don't know what many minor league teams. And like, yeah, because each team has four. They're talking about at least 120. And you just wonder how many more they're hoping they can cut. Now, I'm figuring they probably wish that each team had three. That would probably streamline it enough to cut the difference between development and cost. Because they're going to be paying the players more. This was going to happen if they're going to start paying the minor league players more, which I don't know if they are. I don't remember if that's happening or not, but I don't know.
Not paying them much either way. But
no.
but yeah, the real thing, the next thing that's happening on our basically off-season Indians calendar is did you know the owner's meeting actually happened? The GM meeting is coming up next month, but nothing came out of it. Usually it was a little bit, like the winter meetings are the big one, but the owner meeting at least a couple things, and there's nothing because it was all on Zoom, and so nobody freaking did it. But
I mean, by the industry I work in, you know, it's so many meetings normally happen, and they're like 3-day long affairs, and now they're just like 8 hours on Zoom. You know, I go to some of these conferences, and it's just like it's over 3 days for like 4 hours a day because no one wants to be on Zoom that long.
But yeah, the next thing coming up is the non-tender deadline, which is it's not quite the it's for you basically to say to an arbitration eligible player that we're going to give you a contract. We haven't figured out the deal of it yet, and we'll exchange figures next month before we go to arbitration. This is basically a way of saying that we don't want you to go away quite yet. The deadline for that is December 2nd. The Indians, their arbitration eligible players who they can offer a tendered contract to are Francisco Lindor, Austin Hedges, Delino DeShields, Tyler Naquin, Nick Whitgren, and Phil Maton. I think there's at least three decisions to make in there. I feel like Lindor, you're going to do it unless you just don't think you can salary dump one of the best shortstops in baseball. I think Nick Whitgren, you do it just because $1.8 million for a pretty good reliever. Phil Maton, same thing. He's going to be probably under $1 million for a guy who could be pretty good, and you think he's been fine. And I mean, we both like him. I joke around how much that you like him more than I do, but I like him too. I think he's a decent reliever. I don't think they'll let him go. But I think the big questions here are Austin Hedges, the Shields, and Tyler Naquin. The latter two, just because, I mean, do you even need them anymore? And Austin Hedges, because he's going to be probably around like $3 million. You also have Roberto Perez. You're paying a bunch of money. Like, how much do they want to wrap up in catchers? So who do you think the Indians keep, at least to the point of going to arbitration with them? And this doesn't keep for the season, because obviously they're probably going to tender Lindor and then trade him before he's even in arbitration. But who do you think they'll tender contracts to before the deadline on Wednesday?
I mean, I think they'll hold on to the Hedges just because they only have one catcher on the roster right now, right? Sandy Leon is a free agent.
Oh, no, they have a Mr. Bo Taylor. How could you forget about Bo Taylor, man?
Oh, shit, they do have Bo Taylor.
Dane Cook himself, Bo Taylor.
And also, of course, they have Bo Naylor coming up to the minors, so.
They just like these guys that sound the same. Yeah. Wait till you see Sho Baylor, who's coming up in low A soon.
Tyler Naquin is only ARB2 right now. Yeah. I feel like he's been on this team for 150 years. Like, what?
It definitely does feel like that.
He's been around forever. And I know, obviously, 2016 was his rookie year, but it just feels like he's been on this team.
And he's 30 years old already, which is also ridiculous.
It's wild to me that he's he still has another arbitration year ahead of him after this. I don't think they hold on to the Shields. He's been there's no reason to give him $2.2 million. I mean, he's just been bad. Like, he just wasn't any good, you know? And then Naquin, I don't know, same idea. We all want him to be good, but
he's clearly not.
And like you said, it's just they have other outfielders who can do the same thing he does.
Which isn't a compliment to anybody involved. It's just that they can be what he is, which is whatever he is.
I mean, at this point,
I think even if they didn't tender him, they could bring him back like for a minor league contract. They're not going to pay him $2.1 million.
No, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, no, just don't do that at all. So, at this point, right? I mean, they're going to have what? Luplo and Mercado and Naylor.
And, Bradley Zimmer.
Bradley Zimmer and
Nolan Jones is probably going to be out there at some point.
Nolan Jones.
Daniel Johnson.
At the end of the day, like they'll find garbage to cram in those holes if they need to. Don't worry. We don't need to pay this much for garbage when we already have some over here. I still like the idea of holding on to Hedges, though. I mean, I know you said they have Bo Taylor, but he's just so good defensively. And we've talked about this before, but it's just the one thing this team does good is pitch. And if you can just not have any backsliding when Perez has a day off, or if you find one of your pitchers happens to enjoy throwing to him, which just makes things easier for giving Perez a day off. I just think that makes sense. I mean, like you said, they're giving him, what, $5.5 million this year. I don't know. I mean, I think tying up $8 million in your catcher, it doesn't seem like a lot of money. The Indians are being,
I mean, when that's like, about it. I was gonna say it's like a fifth of their payroll, but
I know.
For, well, most teams, it's not much.
For not, yeah,
it shouldn't be much, is what you're saying.
But like, it's just, I know, I don't know. I can't even get into that side of things, but it's like, I think they'll tender Hedges and Whitgren and Maton. The other guys, DeShields. I'm sorry, Hedges, Whitgren, and Maton, not Naquin. The other guys, there's just no role, right? It's just we have too many outfielders already. If they tender Delino DeShields Jr., my head will explode. This man has.
They're gonna tender him and call him the starting center fielder on the same day. It's gonna be one announcement. Get it all out there.
No matter what, he will be here. It's actually part of his contract. If he doesn't play at least 150 games in center, we have to give him $100 million.
Now, I do think if they feel like last year, because I mean, clearly it wasn't as fast as he was in Texas. He didn't play defense well. Like, if they think a lot of that is because the fact that he had COVID before the season, it like lingering effects of it, then maybe they think he can be better than he was. But I mean, arbitration three, and we should mention these numbers we're saying are like Spotrac, is their estimates for what they make in arbitration. Like, they estimate he'd make a little over $2 million, which seems a lot just to bet that he's not as bad as he looked last year. So I don't know. I'm with you there. I don't think they keep either of them just because they have so many other options that are similar or better than what they have there.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. If they talk themselves into, oh, well, he had COVID last year, so,
so we should
we'll pay. Be getting a great deal this time, boys. Yeah, we're chasing those real inefficiencies.
We got to buy low. That's how it works. You buy low on your arbitration players, and then you sell them high. Merritt, what do you say we answer some questions? I love it. Questions are good. Every Monday, I ask you guys on Twitter, Facebook, and in Let's Go Tribe Discord for some questions to answer, especially now in the off season because, I mean, we're non-tendering players at this point. There's not a whole lot happening. Got a few good ones this week. Zach G on Facebook, he wants to know, what's the most realistic scenario in which the Indians could be a better team next year than they were this year? What would be the most crucial facets for of that scenario? So, how are the Indians going to be good next year, and what do they have to do to get there is basically what this one is.
When we say good, we mean as good as they were in 2019 as far as record's concerned? I just so I
could be a better team. So, I mean, be a better team than they are this year. Round. Yeah.
So they have to do better than just – okay. So first, let's see. They need two more bullpen arms. Now, if one of those ends up being McKenzie, that's fine. They have Class A coming back, and they need another one after that. I think they can throw hard and get people out. Nolan Jones needs to hit. The return of Francisco Lindor has to be good. And Shane Bieber needs to add 2 miles an hour to his fastball, and they need to re-sign Cesar Hernandez. And Josh Naylor needs to make it look like his wild card outing was normal for him. There's a lot of moving parts to this, is what I'm saying. For them to be better than they were this year or last year, like, By win-loss record, right, as far as, like, percentage, this was actually their best in 3 years, 4 years almost. And, in fact, it's their third best winning percentage since, Jesus Christ, 2007, 583. They need to make lots of small improvements and maintain the defense they showed and keep the bats cooking and get better in the bullpen, because as we saw the last couple of years, a starting pitcher goes 4 innings in the playoffs now. So they need to be able to then piece together 5 innings of basically shut down baseball. I think they have 2 in them right now. Need to find the other 2. So yeah, that's all.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you nailed it all. I hope Tristan McKenzie's a starter, not in the bullpen. I get that stuff would play well in the bullpen, but that would be a big improvement. But yeah, I think you covered it all anyway. They need a couple relievers. They need Nolan Jones to hit. They need to actually bring him up.
Yep.
Like, and not just wait for him to be super two. Just let the damn kid play and help you get wins early on. I like the idea of re-signing Cesar Hernandez too. I think that's a big key, just because, I mean, there's not a whole lot else out there, and they don't have anything unless you think like Owen Miller can come up and play second base right away, but he won't be as good as Cesar was. And I think that's fair. Especially Emmanuel Clase, I think he's a big key of it. If he can, if it wasn't all steroids from before, and he's actually as good as he looked,
that'd be a bummer.
He could be a decent bullpen piece. I know, wouldn't it? If he was, that Corey Kluber trade would look even worse for everybody. But But yeah, if he's at least somewhat decent, if he's great, then that's even better. I think the bullpen is almost fixed at that point. If he can be a great closer or whatever they use him, maybe with him and Karinchak and Whitgren and Maiden, that's four great relievers. So I think that's a big key for him. But
and I'd like one
hit
more.
The ball. I mean, and what?
I'd like one more reliever after that, obviously, if I'm being a little bit selfish. And then, like I said, maybe that'll be in the return for the Lindor trade. Who knows? But that has to bring back a bat as well.
I can't imagine trading Lindor and getting another reliever, though. I get they need one, but...
Among, okay. It's fine.
If they headline another trade with a reliever, I'm just going to...
Oh, come on. You can't do that. That'd be a criminal. Like, you can't do that.
Oh, God. It's going to happen, but...
I know.
But yeah, that's another one. The big one, whatever Lindor return for Lindor is, has to be a big contributor, I think, if they're going to be better, obviously, because you're losing Lindor, you got to have better than what he was, which is a big ask for getting a year of Lindor to get an improvement, but we'll see. So thanks for that question. Our next one comes from at Glenn Longwell 89. He wants to know, how reliant on Franmil will we be in 2021 for offense? I mean, I guess that's sort of the same answer again, right? Like if the return for Lindor, if somebody good offensively is there, then maybe not a ton, but I mean, like, Carlos Santana is probably not going to be there. I mean, you can have Jose Ramirez to rely on. Hopefully Nolan Jones will help out, but I feel like maybe more than last year, just because Lindor isn't there, you're going to be relying on Franmil, unless all these things go well with the offense again. But
I mean, it's not like he was great offensively in 2020, you know? I mean, it's only 59 games, but 275, 344, 450. I'd appreciate if the OPS was over 850, basically, is what I'm saying here. He needs to walk more and hit more home runs. Just hit the ball more, you know, more bases, more walks. And will that growth happen? I don't know. We'll have to see. But the answer is probably big, especially if they do trade Lindor and they lose hit Hernandez. And obviously Santana's going to be gone. But yeah, very much, I would say.
Yeah, that's the gist of it, is that very much. But I mean, if they have to rely on him and he's really good, that's going to be fun, because I like good Franmil Reyes because he hits big dongs.
Oh, man, it's the best. When he's on a hot streak, you're like, I don't know, it feels like he's just tearing the face off the earth when he swings the ball. But
yeah, and he's so happy about it, too. He's not like a quiet, low, I'm being good guy. He's like super fun and he's singing, and I love Franmil. I feel like he could replace the Carlos Santana in our hearts of if he stays around for a long time and he's just this big, jolly guy who hits massive home runs. Like, he's the next.
I'm with it, man.
Lovable Santana kind of player. Like, I'm all for it, even though,
but like, I don't think he's going, like, if he's their second best hitter, I mean, and by OPS plus he was this past year, I think that's bad, because the cliff will become steeper and steeper the more guys that leave, right? Like Hernandez and Lindor leave, suddenly your second, your third best hitter, going by this year's numbers, would be someone with an OPS in the 70s, which is not great. So, yeah. And obviously, yeah, Ramirez being an MVP caliber hitter again would be ideal.
Yeah. I think the answer is more than he probably should be relied on, just because it's not a knock on Franmil, but you shouldn't be relying that much on one player, but it's what they're going to be. Unless
25. I mean, you know, again, we forget how young he still is because he's, you know, the size of a house. one would hope that he starts kind of, you know, growing into it more fully, right? And we get like 75.
Is he really 25?
Yeah, dude. I mean, he might be turning 26. Let's see, birthday.
I feel like him and Naquin switched ages.
Now, born July 7th, so he'll be turning 26 in the middle of the season. So, again, I mean, the idea would be he hits, 75 or 80 extra base hits and then walks 50 times. I think those are numbers where we're talking about him being very good to great. So, and, you know, a key kind of aspect of the offense, and that's kind of what they needed to be, honestly. That's why they traded for him. So
yeah, all right, man. Thanks Glenn Wanwell for that question. That was a good one. I like any kind of Franmil. I always want to talk about Franmil Reyes, so there's just nothing to talk about.
Oh yeah, so, man, I mean, honestly, he's one of the clear futures of the team, so it's always fun to chat about.
All right, man, that's gonna do it for us this week. Next week, if you're not already, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, like us on Facebook. I don't think you like us on the podcast, but
like us on
wherever
podcasts.
You find us on a podcast, leave us a review. Let us know how you like it. If you're not already on Discord, you can just at me on Twitter on either Let's Go Tribe or at Matt RLY, and I'll just give you the link to it because it always changes. But if you want to just come to letsgotribe.com, talk in the comments, that's fine too. Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be here.